This is Christian Book Blurb, brought to you by author and songwriter Matt McCleary. Get a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the lives of some of your favourite Christian authors, hear about their books and faith. Also, why not check out my website, mattmcclary.com. This episode is sponsored by Michael T. Gowan's book series, Daniel, and includes Daniel being distinctive in uncertain times and Daniel being faithful in uncertain times. Get your copies from your local Christian bookshop or from malcolmdown.co.uk. Well, hello and welcome to the Christian Book Blurb, the podcast that likes to encourage you in your discipleship one book at a time as we meet some amazing Christian authors and learn about their books, their lives, and their faith. Well, I'm your host, Matt McCleary. Thank you so much for joining me today. And on today's show, I'm going to be talking about The God Who Sees You with the author Georgie Tennant. Hello, Georgie. Welcome to the Christian Book Blurb.
Hi, Matt. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
It's really good to have you here. And today we're speaking about a devotional you've written called The God Who Sees You, which is, of course, the title of this episode. Primarily then, who is the book for?
That is a really interesting question. I think I had a rough idea of who I wanted it to be for before I wrote it, but I think it's ended up inadvertently reaching a wider audience, which is always good news, isn't it? I intended it for adults, male or female. I think I was fairly specific that I wanted it to be both genders, because I didn't want it to be obviously girly. That was the only thing I knew about this book first, but I didn't want it to be girly. I wanted it to appeal for everybody. I suppose adults and, Christians that are walking in their faith, but perhaps struggling a little bit, some of the last knots and things. And now as time has gone on, it's been really nice to see that non-Christians are picking it up and reading it, and teenagers are picking it up and reading it. And yeah, I suppose sort of vulnerable people on the edges that that I wouldn't necessarily thought of as the intended audience. So it's really exciting to see it beginning to spread further than my initial intention, as it were.
That's interesting. Especially when you say you weren't expecting it to reach sort of people who were quite vulnerable, because I've found reading the book myself that it is a very personal and vulnerable book, filled with scripture, but it points towards there's so many examples that you draw out of the biblical narrative of characters who are feeling fragile or unloved or unseen. And in the book, you give some indication of how this reflects some of your own life. So what can you tell us about this?
I think in my life, I've had quite a lot of, I suppose you might say, big things that have happened, like disappointments, grief. So the first major one in my life being losing a baby at 25 weeks. That was about 14 years ago now. And then the second one was losing my sister to cancer 6 years ago when she was only 35. And I just think sometimes the Christian world, as such, the church, isn't always very good at sort of speaking to loss and grief. We rightly encourage people to push forward to hope and encouragement, and we like to have good stories of successes and healings and that kind of thing. So when you're living in a fairly dark place or a hard part of your journey, it can be really hard not to feel kind of unseen or not really understood, or sort of your experience not embraced or represented in the church and Christian life. So I think that would definitely be one of the places it sprung from, sort of trying to find my way or find a way of living with that tension of loss and disappointment and hope.
That reminds me of a conversation I had in the previous podcast, the one that came out just before this one, with John Hindley about his book Weakness Our Strength, where it's this whole idea of, we want to be strong, we want to be successful, but actually there's something about this vulnerability and this weakness that we have, and finding God in that and through that, and not having to feel that you have to be strong or you have to be perfect or you have to be, I don't know, whatever, all the time. Really good.
Definitely. I think that people actually value that vulnerability and that weakness, because so many of us want to put on a brave face and be sort of all together. Not that we should go around, weeping away all the time and crying with everybody that comes across our path, but I think a bit of vulnerability is really encouraging for others. I've had so many people through my life say, thank you for your vulnerability. The fact that you're so open about things enables me to process my challenges and my weaknesses, or not have to hide. And people have even said things like, "You can hang on to faith in God, then so can I." Which I'm not sure that's a good thing
Yeah,
or not.
it's amazing how this conversation is kind of tying all sorts of other ones I've had recently together. Because you're quite right, it's that being willing to be vulnerable also gives an authenticity to what you're saying. And Stephen Clare Musters, who wrote Grace-Filled Marriage, are up on the next podcast after this one. So that's coming up.
Excellent.
And they're all talking about being very vulnerable and open about marriage and relationships in that particular context. But one of the things they found, and I guess in quite a few Christian books, not just marriage ones or whatever, is that sometimes they're a bit too theoretical, or sometimes it's just like, oh, this is the teaching and this is how it should be, and it all becomes quite textbook, and you kind of think, oh, well, I don't meet this mark, I don't meet the standard of being the perfect Christian or living the perfect life or having the perfect relationship or whatever it is. So it's actually quite freeing in a way when people are vulnerable and are authentic and are brave enough to say, yeah, life's tough. Yeah, life is hard. And like what you were saying in your book, in your book, The God Who Sees You, that, you can be vulnerable, you can be feeling unloved, you might be feeling unseen, but God does see you. So, that's really, really good. So thank you for writing in that very vulnerable, open way. Now, several chapters deal with seeing God and Him seeing us, even within the ordinariness of everyday life. Why is it important for us to recognize God at work within the ordinary as well as the extraordinary?
I just think so many of us are so focused on the extraordinary stuff in our lives, then that generates disappointment, because so much of our life is lived in the ordinary. We are human beings. We are dealing with, work and tiredness and kids and, all those different kind of things, and feeling hungry and those sort of things. And I just think if you only focus on the extraordinary, you've only got very few testimonies every so often of an amazing thing that God's done. But if you, I always think that in church there should be an opportunity for what I call fun testimonies.
I
So
like that.
rather than testimonies, we all have our testimony slots. I think there should be a chance at untestimony, which would be bits where God didn't quite answer our prayers as we expected, but somehow, we grew, or we kept going, or we clung on to faith despite it, or some of those kind of things. I managed not to shout at my husband when he ate the last piece of cheese in the, that kind of thing. Imagine the church being stood up about those kind of things said. But yeah, I was just thinking the Bible as well. There's so many examples of ordinary things. For example, Elisha has a great share of ordinary miracles, like purifying water for a community, or making an axe head float. It was so important for somebody to have their axe head back, or using herbs to unpoison the stew that had been poisoned. There's lots of these sort of food and drink miracles in the Bible, and we don't always see those kind of ordinary provision things and as miracles. And I think it just boosts your faith and your expectancy level so much if you can start to see God at work in the very ordinary things of life, the conversations, the talk around the dinner table where you're perhaps sowing seeds into your children's lives, or your opportunities at work to come alongside a colleague and agree and support them. All of those ordinary things are serious acts of God, bringing the kingdom into everyday life, and we don't see those and celebrate them enough.
Well, that's really good. Thank you. Self-image is another topic you touch on in your book, The God Who Sees You. Is this something that you've struggled with?
Yeah, I have. I think just generally through life, I was always a sort of high achiever at school. I was a really perfectionist student that wanted, you know, got A's, A stars.
Oh, lucky you.
And fly home.
In my dreams.
It's not the thing these days, is it? If eights and nines these days, so the young, the youth quite understand what A's, A stars mean. But yeah, I was a high flyer. I think I put pressure on myself. And then I think as a Christian as well, I do come from a Christian background. So for me, I try to sort of work out as I pull along, you know, how do I be a Christian? How does all of this work? And often sort of compare myself to others and find myself not measuring up. That I just think is so important to work on those kind of things and not let those kind of things drag you down and, you know, spoil your mental health, your peace, your faith. There's so much in the Bible about, you know, who you are in Christ. There's a brilliant series called Freedom in Christ that I spent some time working through, and it just reminds you of all those great verses about how you're God's masterpiece and you're fearfully and wonderfully made and you're called, you're chosen. You know, you don't have to kind of be tossed and turned on the waves of self-doubt and self-image. So yeah, having that sort of strong anchor in those things is so important. Yeah.
And I guess that's what you're saying in the book as well, is that God sees you, but he kind of sees you as he has made you, rather than maybe how you see yourself. Yeah. And
absolutely.
Yeah, finding our self-image in God and what he says. I mean, you've touched on some of the great verses there that we can find about it. I mean, the Bible is a really important thing to do. How does knowing that God sees us in all stages of life, in every circumstance we face, how does knowing this help us and our discipleship?
I think it really helps us because we all have this sort of false concept that if life isn't going well, if, you know, circumstances aren't in our favour, then what's off with us? You know, it's all very wrong. And it's the kind of thing that does cause us to doubt our faith and causes a lot of people to walk away from their faith. So I think knowing that God sees us and understands us and guides us and is with us in all of our circumstances, and not only that, you can turn them around and bring good from them, just helps us to be better anchored. I think it makes our faith less dependent on circumstances. It helps our roots to go deeper. We just sort of are able to trust that he will bring good from it somehow. We trust him rather than the circumstances around us. I just think it's such a difficult thing to grasp as a new Christian, that, you know, life isn't always going to be amazing. It isn't always going to be perfect, but you can trust God within and despite your circumstances, your faith can
go deeper. Just zooming in on something you said there, you mentioned doubt. What do we do with doubt? Is it okay for a Christian to doubt, or do we just pretend it isn't there? Or, you know, what if we are experiencing doubt and doubting our faith or doubting God or whatever it may be, what can we do with that? How should we handle that? Where can we go?
I think, yes, absolutely, it's okay to doubt and express our doubts. And I think it's so important to do that. So in what a sermon I preached once, I told a story of my husband who accidentally one day left the lemonade bottle in the freezer overnight. You'll see the link in a minute. And so I was in the kitchen with my then 3-year-old son, and all of a sudden a freezer door blew open, shattering bits of freezer and ice and lemonade all over the kitchen. And yeah, he'd only intended to leave it in there for a couple of hours or an hour to cool down, left it in for overnight. And the result was such a huge explosion that, you know, it blew the whole freezer door open and so on. And I just think that's a great illustration of what happens if we don't deal with those doubts. You know, if we, that build up of doubt and fear and anger and all of those things just blow and implode or explode at some point, and that's when we walk away. But if we're able to deal honestly with those doubts, if we're able to perhaps talk to a trusted friend, get some prayer, have some counselling, read some fantastic books, they're often brilliant books on this subject, a couple I can recommend in a minute if you want me to, and I just think you can sort of try and find a bit of a theology of kind of well, not a theology of doubt, but a sort of theology for when things go wrong, and then you can sort of walk with that tension of doubt and fear and wanting things to be better, but not implode, because you're sort of processing it and finding things that help you to process it.
Tell us one of those books. One of our listeners might, you know, really benefit from that.
Well, I think one that everybody would have heard of is called On Mute by Pete Gregg. That's a fantastic book. It talks a lot about unanswered prayer. And he's got his unanswered prayer course online as well. That's brilliant. But the other one that as well too really impacted me are both by Jerry Sitzer, which are, one is When God Doesn't Answer Your Prayers, and one is A Grace Disguised. And Jerry Sitzer lost his wife, daughter, and mother. I think it was in the same car crash. So when you read the details, you think, wow, this is the man that's walked it. He's been there. He's lived the hard stuff, and he still managed to cling on to God. So things like that, reading things like that, sort of helped me find a way through my own doubts and disappointments as well.
Yeah, thank you for that. Coming back to your book then, of The God Who Sees You, it's broken up into sort of short, bite-sized chapters, I guess is the best description, because it's intended to be like a devotional, isn't it? You could take it on holiday and read it on the beach, I suppose, but I don't think that's the intention behind it. So are you hoping people to kind of try and engage with this daily or sort of fairly regularly? And, you know, how is the structure of it set up to work in your mind?
I think it's set up as a 30-day devotional. By explaining the introduction, I want it to be a book that people can access at their own pace, wherever they want to. So I told a friend that I was doing a 30-day devotional, but without dates. Because when I start a new one, every day with Jesus or any other ones that are on the market at the moment, or Our Daily Bread, and by the 5th of March, I'm still on the 3rd of March, then by the 10th of March, I'm still on the 5th of March, that kind of condemnation kind of creeps in. And she joked at the time, she said, oh good, every other day with Jesus. I've always wanted someone to write one of those. We had a bit of a giggle about that. But, you know, it's not intended to make people spend time with God, less, far from it, but it's intended for people to access it at their own pace, in their own way. And the devotionals are meaty enough that you could just read the one verse that I've written at the top and then the devotional, or you could read the whole passage, or you could read, you could do it all in one go if you wanted. But basically there's a verse, there's a reflection where I dig quite deeply into the biblical character I'm talking about, that I link it into my own life. And then after that, there's some questions for people to reflect, and there's a song at the end of every devotional that I've recommended. A lot of people have said they really love the song and quite helpful, it's quite unusual in a devotional. And people have said that when you've got that song then in your head for the rest of the day or the rest of the week, it just helps you to reflect and keep ruminating on whatever God has said to you through the reflection. They've had a lot of comments about how much people really enjoy that quite unique factor of the devotional. And when they buy the books directly from me, they get a little bookmark or a postcard with a link to the playlist on both Spotify and YouTube, so they can just plug it in and out that playlist directly rather than searching for the songs every day.
That's really interesting. So the best thing is to buy the book from you and then they get the little bookmark with the link on it. I was just going to say, it might be showing my age, but I remember when I was younger, you couldn't just find a song, you know, you had to buy the tape or buy the CD.
And then
you only got the 12 songs that were on that particular recording and you didn't have all the others. So these days it's great because you could just give the artist name and the title of the song and you type it in whichever platform you use and ping, there it is, or there's 40 different versions of the same song by different artists or whatever. That's really good.
It's so much better.
Oh no, that's interesting.
I had one of the older ladies from my church who started reading my book, and then after about another half of it, her daughter bought her a smartphone. She called me over and excited me up for prayer meeting one day to tell me how excited you were that she could just put it in her phone and the song came out. I just thought, how sweet. We take the same for granted, don't we, in this generation?
They're very good. It was weird. Some children, my daughter's age, well, my daughter's grown up in my house, so she knows what a CD is. But some children my daughter's age saw some of my CDs and they were like, what is this? You know, what's this strange circular thing? You know, is weird? This shiny thing. And I had to try and explain that, you know, that's where music is recorded. It made me feel so old. I know.
Scary.
Anyway, there we go. The world is changing at a fast pace. That might be a topic for another episode.
Certainly is.
Anyway, there we go. We digress. So back to your book. How did the book begin? Where did the initial idea or inspiration come from?
Well, the whole thing actually started in the first lockdown. And I think like know people, it just felt so strange to have everything ripped away from you. So I'm a teacher, and so I have a busy job, you know, my kids do those activities, you know, I'm in the church and so on. So suddenly have all of those things ripped away from you, you're just on your own at home, you know. I just found that really, really hard. I sort of felt as if I was unseen, and all the things that gave me identity and purpose have sort of disappeared for a time. And so, yeah, one day I literally sat in the garden in the sun, it was lovely, that lockdown summer, and I just read the story of Hagar. And I made some notes. I do journal a bit sometimes when I read the Bible. So I just made some notes, and I just came away from that moment, I suppose, just feeling a bit better. Like, God sees me. This is okay. We're in this together. You know, it's gonna use it for good. And I actually then typed it up as a kind of reflection of it, like the ones in my book. And I shared it with our pastor, and he felt that it was good to encourage people. So it was sent around as a PDF, whatever, on WhatsApp, and people read it. And then I wrote a second one, and a third and fourth of this. So it's your Hey Dance, three on David. And they all went out, and then lockdown carried on, and I got busy because teaching came back online. It was different things. I never wrote any more. And then sometime later, and I'm a member of the Association of Christian Writers, as you are, and chatting to someone in the garden at our social, who works for the children's bit of Kevin Mayhew, who published God Who Sees You. And I was just telling her about my wife's thing. And she basically encouraged me to pitch it to Kevin Mayhew, you know, to see whether it was something they would want me to develop, things for a devotional, and publish. So yeah, these things all turn extremely slowly, but eventually, you know, have a Zoom meeting with Kevin Mayhew, and they said yes, they liked the idea, you know, when I write it, gave me a deadline. Like, just came away from that meeting like really excited, but also petrified, and I've got to write the other 25 sections of the thing.
Oh, interesting. I always love to hear how books come to be. No, that's great. Just before our little break, your book is speaking to those who feel unseen. It's speaking about characters in the Bible who might have felt that as well. What advice or what words of encouragement might you have for any of our listeners who might be feeling unseen?
I think it's just good to, ask God for that revelation that you are seen, that you are loved, that you are understood, that you aren't alone. Because when you can get that just deep conviction in your heart, you just feel like things are worth probably on for, even when it doesn't feel like it. So it's all about just take it to God, you know, asking him, like he did to me with Hagar in the garden on that lockdown sunny day, you know, just God revealing it directly to your heart, so that your purpose and your identity comes from him rather than from all the things that are going on around you. I mean, that's so important.
That's great. Thanks, Georgie. And we'll be back chatting some more with the author, Georgie Tennant, after these messages. So join us on the other side of these.
The book of Daniel in the Bible was written over 2,500 years ago, yet it remains highly relevant for us today. Daniel and his friends were transported to a society where their future was uncertain and where they encountered hostility to the practice of their faith. Their response gives us important pointers as to how we can maintain our distinctiveness and enjoy God's protection in similar situations. Michael T. Gowan's series of reflections are found within his book series called Daniel. The first of these is Daniel, Being Distinctive in Uncertain Times, that looks at the first three chapters of this book of the Bible. And chapters 4-6 are covered in his second book, Daniel, Being Faithful in Uncertain Times. Get your copies today from malcolmdown.co.uk, your local Christian bookshop, or from Amazon. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, you can help keep it on the web. All you've got to do is buy me a coffee. Head over to buymeacoffee.com/Matt McClary to make a donation. There is a link in this episode's show notes. So go on, buy me a coffee today and help this podcast to keep supporting Christian books and authors.
Welcome back to Christian Book Blurb, the podcast that likes to encourage you in your discipleship one book at a time. We have been chatting with author Georgie Tennant about her book, The God Who Sees You. Now, Georgie, after the break, we like to get to know the author a little bit better. We've heard quite a bit about your book, which sounds fantastic. It is great. I've read it. But we want to find out a little bit more about you. So, who are you? Where are you? What do you do? No, there's too many questions at once. Let's start off with what do you do for fun?
Well, what do I do for fun? I think I'm still at the stage of life where most things are about children and work and running them around. But when I do have a spare moment, I do really enjoy going for walks and coffees with friends. That sounds very middle-aged, doesn't it? But that is something that just, you know, refills my tank. You know, I try and go for a walk most Mondays with a friend. We just go around the village and, you know, just catch up and get a bit of exercise at the same time. And I think the other thing I love to do for myself is just to go for a really long bath with my chin full, which
don't
sounds terrible.
Drop it. Yeah, I was going to say
the bath at any point, but I never have yet. So it's just having the opportunity to just relax and read a good novel. I just think it just makes me feel like I've really had some me time.
And speaking about coffee with friends, what is your favourite coffee shop?
I'd simply say Costa. That's a bit boring, isn't it? A big chain, but you know, you get free one every so often. I like going for a nice cappuccino there and then some of their Christmassy coffee.
Oh, what really flavour nice Christmassy well. Coffee? The gingerbread one.
Gingerbread latte. Yeah, the gingerbread ones, they're really pretty good.
The marshmallow ones as well, aren't they? I'm not too sure about those ones. Anyway. Good.
No.
And so you've kind of mentioned being a teacher as well. So is that your main job? Is writing your main job? Or, you know, where you're at in terms of all of that?
Yeah, so I teach part-time. So I teach 2 days a week. But anybody that's ever been a teacher or known a teacher will know that's never actually 2 days a week. So that just tends to spread into the rest of the week a little bit as well. So I teach, I'm in Kingsland in Norfolk. So I teach secondary English. I'm in an 11, 16 school. So I teach up to GCSE at the moment, although I've had to walk up to A-level in the past. So yeah, I teach part-time. Which is a lovely luxury that enables me then to do other things that I have a passion for, which include the writing. And also I volunteer for Care for the Family. So I spend a bit of time doing some bereavement support stuff with Care for the Family, which enjoy is probably the wrong word, but I do enjoy it in a weird sort of way. Because again, it's that sort of bereavement to the broken. It's that similar sort of theme.
Oh, interesting. And you've got a young family. So let's talk about TV. Do you enjoy anything, or is there anything your family's particularly enjoying watching together at the moment?
Well, we've got to the stage in life where one's 15 and one's 13, and they've both got quite different tastes, so it's quite hard to find something we all agree on these days. But there are a few things we like watching. We all love a good Marvel series. Any of the Marvel series on Disney Plus, we're all there having a chocolate mug cake, which the boys have mastered making, and watching that. And then we love a bit of cheese on Saturday night. So we all do rather enjoy the Michael McIntyre big show. We all gather for that on a Saturday night for a bit of a giggle and some silly laughs.
That's great. That's wonderful. Have you got anything coming up soon? Now, it could be another book idea that you might have been thinking of. Some authors I ask, they kind of go, oh, no, I can't reveal any secrets. But some are quite gracious, without giving us sort of the major plot line or anything, just sort of a very general outline if you've got anything coming up. But it may not be a book. It could be, I don't know, anything really, anything that you've got going on.
Oh, I've always got things bubbling away in the background. It's kind of how to actually get them from bubbling to actually do the work in progress and tricky things. So I don't know, I think I've got a few different ideas. So quite a lot of people have said, when does The God Who Sees You 2 come out? So I'm not sure yet whether that is the right thing, but I have started gathering some ideas of biblical characters that I could use. I've just thought, like, the notes taken on my phone, I've just been jotting down, you know, Bible verses, characters, songs, you know. So if I do decide that's the right thing, I've got an outline that I could pitch to somebody, whether Ken Mayhew will have it or not. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I've got ideas for that. I've got various things in the background that I've written that could be collected in something, again, something devotional-ish. I was really lost to write more specifically about grief and loss, because I had so much experience of that, and it ties in with my Kirsten's family stuff. So yeah, lots of ideas in the back burner. And I do a little bit of speaking as well, so that's my next thing. I've got a couple of days local and May, so I'm going to start, because that's kind of writing as well. You've got to start writing those things. And yeah, there's always something to squeeze in on my day off.
No, that's great. Thank you. And speaking of speaking and possible books coming out, and indeed the book that you do have out already, have you got any sort of social media accounts that people can find you on, or where can people find your books to buy them? Have you got a website, anything like that?
I have not yet become professional. I have a website, so I think I'll quite go that far. But yeah, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and recently on Instagram. I'm still getting to grips with that, much to the disgust of my 30-year-old son, who thinks I should be conversant already. I'm easily findable on all of those. I'm just Georgie Tennant on all of those, so it's really easy to find me. And then I have my own blog as well, which again, not updated for a while, but there's lots of historic stuff on there, you know, grief and loss. There might be poetry as well as the devotional, which I've included bits of that in devotional. But yes, you can find that part to find it. Some poems by georgie.blogspot.co.uk. So yeah, you do have to do a bit of a deeper Google to find that.
And where can people buy your books?
So anywhere books are sold, really. Amazon, if they're allowed to say the A word. Or lots of Christian online retailers have it, Kevin Mayhew direct themselves, or of course, lots of Christian bookshops. They're amazing. So you can just go to your local Christian bookshop and just ask them to get it in for you, and they'll order it in for you. So there's plenty of ways you can get it. A quick Google will come up with lots of options for you. Or direct from me, you know, if you want to contact me on social media, there we can sort that out. And you can get the copy with your book. Welcome, please.
So what we'll do for the benefit of our listeners is we will put a link to your most favoured social media profile in the show notes of this episode, so that they can click through, find you, and find out how to order a book with that very valuable bookmark with the links on it to the music and the songs. So we'll pop that in there for them. Yeah, it just leaves me really to say thank you. Thank you very much for this great half hour we've spent chatting together all about your book, The God Who Sees You. And yeah, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. I've enjoyed myself too. Really appreciate it.
And a very big thank you to the sponsor of this episode, Michael T. Gowan, and his series of books called Daniel. Do go and grab yourself a copy from malcolmdown.co.uk or wherever good Christian books are sold. Go check it out.
And thank you as well for listening to this episode of Christian Book Blurb. Don't forget, the podcast comes out twice a month, on the 1st and the 15th. So do join us again for another episode where I'll be chatting with another Christian author about their books, their life, and their faith. So do join us again really soon. Thanks for listening. Goodbye. Thanks for listening to Christian Book Blurb with your host, Matt McCleary. Do give it a like, give it a share, and let your friends know all about it. We do hope to see you again soon on another Christian Book Blurb.